In this episode, I'm joined by Nancy Lehrer. She's a street photographer from Southern California.
This is TWIP.
So street photography, as it turns out, is one of the most popular genres when people decide that they want to get into this business. And Nancy Lehrer has been doing it for quite a while. And she has some interesting perspectives on street photography, some of them controversial. We're going to talk about those in this episode. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frederick. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Thanks for taking time out of your Friday to chat with me and let me pick your brain. There's a lot of cool stuff to talk about, I think. Let's dive right into this. So you are, like I said in the little intro there, you're a street photographer. You're based in Southern California. Give us the origin story for Nancy. Like, how did you get bitten? I always say this, you know, and now that superheroes are becoming more fashionable, this doesn't sound as cool, but I always say, what's your origin story and what was the radioactive photography spider that bit you?
Oh, there you go. So, you know, I don't know why, but cameras were always in my household. My father always took pictures. We always had cameras and we weren't a family with lots of, you know, special things. So I never thought it was unusual to have cameras. But I remember specifically when I was 9 going off to camp with a Brownie Hawkeye camera, which takes big 6x9 negatives, and becoming the camp photographer and being published in the camp newsletter and things like that. So I always had this penchant for doing this kind of documentary, photographing what was around me. My father always did that. So I just kind of got into it and I followed that for a while till I decided to become a musician and decided to become a computer scientist. And then about 10 years ago, digital photography, you know, was becoming consumer affordable. And I really I was able to get back into it because it took a little less planning, I would say, than film. Mm-hmm. And so I just started studying. I started studying with people like Sam Abel, Jay Mazel, Arthur Meyerson, Gerd Ludwig, who's in LA, and really got into street photography completely and understanding what it's really about and how to make good compositions with street photography and the like that.
Yeah, I love that. So help me understand this. And I'm asking a question that I think, I don't know if this question is answerable, but this is this is more of a perspective-based question. Street photography and positioning of the genre versus, say, photojournalism. In your head, what are the differences between the two genres?
Well, I think, National Nat Geo photographers like Gerd Ludwig or Allard or, you know, there's a number of them. They get an assignment, and they have to... Or they actually often pitch an assignment, but they're going after telling a particular story and they have to plan the story that they're going to tell. Mm-hmm. But I think street photography should tell stories, but the difference is you might not plan them. They might be lighter stories. There might be really short sequence stories, stories that you can tell in an afternoon versus going to, you know, telling the story of Tolstoy over the course of, you know, a year. Mm-hmm. Or the American Cowboy. You know, these are some of the stories that Sam Abel did with the Nat Geo. So I think it's like photojournalism light. I think it's like photo documentary light. Yeah. For me, at least that's the way I approach it. I always try to put some sort of story, some sort of interesting context of current sociology into my photographs. I do short little series of my family, of people I meet as well.
That is cool. See that, and that, I think that just the way that you positioned it clears it up for a lot of people, because it is, that's the way I see it as well. I see, you know, coming from a photojournalism background, I see street photography as, you know, just a random label, you know, for right, a different kind of photojournalism, where photojournalism is you are documenting and telling stories with photography. Photojournalism, same thing with street photography. but street sounds so grungy and cool and hip, so we have to put that on there. Photojournalism sounds like, you know, National Geographic or the New York Times or something like that. We can't have that, you know. That's what old, crazy, you know, the photographers with these brownies and all this stuff they shoot. But, you know, as hip photographers with mirrorless cameras are street photographers.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there are some street photographers that are really intentionally saying, I'm not here to say anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just here to capture some interesting moment or some, you know, unique thing I see on the street. Sure. So there are some street photographers who go by that mantra as well. But
and
me,
is that
like
valid? I mean, let's dive into that piece a little bit, because I see that as well, you know, in many genres where people, you know, people use photography, which, and there's nothing wrong with anything that you do, you know, within reason, obviously, with photography. But some people use it as a catharsis for, like, you know, I just want to go out. I want to be by myself. I want to play with this high-tech thing. I want to capture images. I want to take them back and play with them in the software and maybe put it on Instagram or not, which is valid. And they don't really have the underlying goal to tell a story or to be important, which is valid. But I think maybe it's because of my photojournalism background. I feel like it's, you know, to have fun with it, it's a storytelling thing. Like you said, with your family, even if it's a small story of your mom on Mother's Day, you know, this is Friday before mm-hmm. Mother's Day, you know, and the things that happen there in five or six pictures, seems like that'd be more interesting than just a shot of mom waving at the camera or mom sitting in the corner opening a gift or something, right?
Or some visually appealing, you know, the juxtaposition of a person walking down the street with wings, with, you know, angel wings on a mural behind them, yeah. Right? To me, visual eye candy is great, but if it tells a story beyond that, that to me is really important.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, is because it's like I wanted to say that point.
Yeah, well, tell me about the book, because that is you know, obviously we'll link to it in the description and the blog post for the video and the episode and all that stuff. But tell me about the book. What did you write it for, and all that? Yeah, life happens in color. Yeah,
life happens in color.
Yeah, which I'm going to title this interview right. The Life Happens in Color as well.
Right. So you know, it's subtitled Street Photography Manifesto. And so by titling it as a manifesto, it really meant that I have these beliefs and I want to do something with my photography. And it took me a long time to figure out why I photograph, because you take a lot of pictures and then you wonder, like, why should I show this? You know, mm-hmm. I think it looks good. I think it might be nice. And so it started as almost a protest, a little out of anger, a little out of frustration that there was this movement towards street photography as juxtapositions on the street in black and white. And it had to be in black and white because that's the tradition of street photography. And, you know, just some visual shadow and light play was enough. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking to myself, that's not enough for me. And maybe yeah. It's because I did study with, you know, some photojournalists. Mm-hmm. I'm not a photojournalist like you are. I don't have the real credentials of a photojournalist. But or maybe it's just buried within me that, you know, I want to see something more complex in what I'm looking at and think about it harder. So I started out. I said, well, what are things I really believe in? You know, I believe in story. I believe in using color. You know, I believe in composition. You know, so it can't just be this mess of people with one face showing for no reason. Mm-hmm. I believe in telling bigger context of things. And I believe in using all this to say something about where we are in society, where we might be going. And so that if you look back at it in a number of years, you might say, you might understand something more about 2018. I can't believe we're at 2018.
I know. It's
people
crazy.
Said like 2001, you know?
Right. I'm like, where are my flying cars? They promised me flying cars by now. So, well, Nancy, hey, while you were talking, I Googled you. I Googled Life Happens in Color. And the first thing that came up was an excerpt, and it says, It's got the title of the book by you, and it says, "I believe in the use of photography to tell candid stories that document the human condition in order to bring people together with understanding and acceptance." And your subtitle there is a street photography manifesto. What do you mean by manifesto?
Well, so manifesto, I guess it comes out of, older people think the Communist Manifesto, but a manifesto is really just a laying out of your beliefs. Mm-hmm. What do you believe and what are the principles that drive what you do? So coming from the software world, there are software project management manifestos, believe it or not, that are pretty actually prevalent. And so I said, I want to make a strong statement, so I'm going to call it a manifesto. This is my beliefs, and you can read it and you can disagree with it, but because I've clearly labeled it, and I say so in the intro that these are my beliefs. This is how I approach photography, and mm-hmm. you can do it differently. And
you can write your own manifesto if you don't.
Yeah. Write your own manifesto. What do you believe in? Why do you pick up the camera? Why do you photograph? Mm-hmm. We can take pictures of our food, but I think you should think about, well, why do you do that?
Right. That's it. You could do street or photojournalism or whatever with your phone if you wanted to, for example. Like you mentioned, taking pictures of your food. Instead of just taking pictures of your food and then sharing that, why not take a couple of pictures that show the food close up, that show the table setting, that show the person you're eating with and the restaurant, to put it all in context, maybe the menu with the item that you ordered on or something like that, to tell a little tiny micro story versus just a, hey, here's what I'm eating right now. And it's disposable.
Or right? Do you have some intent of showing food for the next 10 years and how it progresses, or, mm-hmm. How restaurants are changing, how, we're going to more restaurants with high-end food, but they're low-end service, order at the counter, they bring it to you kinds of things.
Yeah.
So is there any intent? Like I'll say that, if I get asked to judge at a photo club or something and a picture will come up and it might be really abstract or something, I'll say, this is an interesting picture, but I want to see 10 of these. I want to make sure this was your intent.
Right.
You had something behind, and it wasn't just a happy accident.
Yes. That's it. Photography with intent, not happy accidents. So let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about hardware and software and your mindset or manifesto or, your approach to editing your photos. So I want to, we'll transition that into software or into hardware, but some photographers like me will say pixels were born to be punished, and and this is where it gets a little slippery. Unless you're doing documentary where you're telling a story like what we're talking about here, if you're creating pure art, then you're capturing, for me, clip art or components of a final composition that you're gonna present to the world later. But of course, if you're doing news or you're presenting a situation and you want to bring the viewer to where you were for some sort of awareness, then of course you don't want to mess with the image at all. Where do you fall on that? Do you manipulate your images? Do you clone things out? Do you add things in? What's your mindset around that?
So I do your standard Lightroom dodging and burning, adjustments, contrast adjustments, tone curve adjustments like that. The highlights.
It's like general darkroom stuff, right? It's stuff that you would do in a darkroom.
Yeah. Obviously, I will clone things out. I will clone out, some stray branch that came into the edge that you couldn't control in the frame when you were doing stuff like that, or a piece of trash. If it's stray and causing problems, I will try to do that in camera. Mm-hmm. Obviously, rather than cloning it out at the end, but I will clone things out. Even like a stray extra street light somewhere that might be just, hurting the overall effect. But when I take the picture, it's not with the intent of, oh, I'm going to crop this way and I'm going to clone it out. So I'm not going to go so far as to say, you should never crop. Everything should be perfect in the camera. Although I try to do that. And more I find that I crop less and less after the fact. But the more you do have your intent about what's in the frame, the better your ultimate picture is going to be, even if you do clone a few things or crop a few things.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's just my.
Now, when you head out there and you're shooting, so you give yourself a self assignment, you're like, I'm going to go shoot this festival, right? And do you write down or have in your head the shot list of what you want to get, or is it? Do you allow yourself to be driven by serendipity? And it's just like, hey, I'm going to put myself out there and I'm just going to enjoy the moment and capture things that catch my eye. How do you approach it?
Mostly the latter. Mostly I try to go out there and be open and think about what I'm doing. So there's a street festival this weekend at the Conejo Valley Days. It's, I live in the Conejo Valley. And it's just basically a street fair with rides and stuff. And I really enjoy doing night photography and lights and stuff. So that's in the back of my mind. But what am I going to see there, whether I'm going to see kids or, you know, sort of playing or teenagers, you know, sort of hanging in bunches and groups and doing what teenagers do, or what I'm actually going to see, I don't know, you know, hot dog eating contests. I have no idea. So I try and keep myself open to what I'm going to see once I'm going there, but I know I'm going there because I love to shoot night with interesting lighting and things like that. So,
yeah. Well, what about color, Nancy? What about color? So you mentioned that, like the title of your book is Life Happens in Color, right? Mm-hmm. Traditionally, street photographers don't use color for the most part. Some do, but traditionally it's a black and white sort of genre. What gives you the right to use color? I don't understand. Explain yourself.
So first I'm going to ask the question. I said, do I think that the tradition of street photography in black and white is due to the aesthetic choices of the fathers of this genre, say Cartier-Bresson, or is it due to technical choices? Mm-hmm. So they could control more, they could develop more quickly, they could print more easily if it was in black and white. So I want people to ask that question. But you know, so then I hear people say, well, I'm not going to bet my life on the fact that this pail is red instead of yellow or green. And I don't want, you know, I think color distracts. And my reaction to that is you need to learn to use color. So I don't take a lot of scenes with just every color in it and this mishmash. I think I'm actually drawn to scenes where there's an interesting color palette already there. Yeah. Blues and browns, pinks and browns. I have this one picture in the book that's just, I didn't plan anything this way, but it's pretty much predominantly yellow and red with this woman holding this bouquet of white flowers over her head and putting yellow mustard on a dog with yellow signs. And I think I'm drawn to those color scenes already work. They're a couple colors. They're not like this cacophony of colors, or there's something that stands out as the color makes it stand out. There was a scene I saw in one of the markets in Italy recently where the fishmongers, who have predominantly these large displays of cod with this white fish, they'll put these beautiful red tomatoes out on their, you know, as part of the display of their fish to catch your eye. Well, we should be capturing that as photographers. That's, people think about color. Color creates emotional context, but you can't just, you have to use it just like you would use light and shadows. Yeah. You have to think about it ahead of time. And, if the color destroys the scene, I just don't take images of that scene, maybe.
Yeah. And the way I look at it is, like you said, you hit it right on the head. Color is another tool. And if you approach it as a tool that's in service of the image or the story that you're telling, then things, you know, you take a slightly different tack or perspective on things. If color is taking away from the story that you're trying to tell, then by all means, get rid of it. But if it's adding to it, then keep it in. So, that's the cool thing about photography. There are no rules. There's no one rule. It's all subjective, and it's all in service of what you're trying to accomplish with photography. Go ahead.
I'm just wired to look for color and to look for how color works together. Yeah. That's what works for me.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about gear.
Ah.
and your approach to gear, because there's, you know, I've talked to many, many photographers, and they range the gamut from the Batman sort of mindset or James Bond, where I need to have every piece of kit available to me so that I can capture whatever situation is thrown at me, you know, so they end up with a bag full of lenses and gear and strobes and filters and ND and all this stuff. And then on the other side, there are the minimalists. And I tend to see this more in the street photography genre, but there are the minimalists that are like, you know what? I'm going out there with one body, maybe a backup, but one body, maybe, you know, one lens, maybe two lenses, but one, my favorite lens, and I'm going to capture my self-imposed assignment with just that gear. Where are you on that spectrum?
So I'm more on the one body, one lens spectrum. I don't hold it as a hard and fast rule, but I will, if I'm just going out walking, without, if you're on assignment doing something, you need a little more flexibility. But if I'm just out walking, it's one body. I use the Olympus Micro Four Thirds, cameras, mm-hmm. One body with, my favorite, it's a 17 millimeter on the Olympus, but it's a 34 millimeter field of view, mm-hmm. 35 millimeter field of view lens. I'll go out and I'll move my feet and I'll frame up the world in the 35 millimeter focal length.
Yeah. And that's what they say, like the 35 millimeter focal length is kind of like a normal quote lens, right? Where it's that focal length or that field of view most accurately represents what you're looking at through your eyes with no camera. So you're seeing the scene through your camera as the viewer would see it. Versus yeah, a wide 40. Angle. Yeah, in that range. Yeah, versus, you know, an ultra wide, which is going to distort things a little bit, or a telephoto, which is going to zoom in and your eyes can't really do that. So, right. So interesting.
So 28 is a really common, it's like even gaining popularity, 28 millimeters in street photography. I have a really nice 24 millimeter mm-hmm. Lens, but, you know, I feel most comfortable in the 35. So yeah. that's what works for me.
And you go with what your manifesto, right? You're writing the book. Yeah. You're writing the book of you, right?
That's right.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up here. So I want to talk a little bit, and I feel like it's important to talk about safety a little bit, you know, as we go into this, because, you know, you're a woman walking around Los Angeles with, you know, a relatively expensive camera and probably your phone and all this other stuff, which could pay somebody's rent and pay some, you know, and feed their kids for a couple of weeks or so, right? So what precautions do you take so that you don't become part of the story, you know?
Right. Well, so there are probably places that I won't go. I mean, I won't go and do photography in Skid Row. Mm-hmm. Maybe if there's a toy drive or a Thanksgiving dinner or something like that going on and there's a lot of people, I might go down there and I might bring a friend. So there are places that I just won't go, and that limits my subject matter. I also don't particularly ask permission, but it's really hard for people really not to see you.
Yeah.
I don't sneak photos. I think people get more upset if they see you sneaking a photo than if you just like raise the camera to your eye, and they might get upset. Don't take my picture, and you just take it down. And you say thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's worth. Jay Maisel says this on at his workshops, and he says this every time. He says his biggest worry is when he sends people off onto the streets of New York to take their pictures, and he says, just remember, it's not worth. No picture is worth making anybody's day worse.
Yeah. Great
so
words.
So if I get, no matter how much I want it, if I get pushback, I'll either walk away or I'll go up and talk to the person and say, you know, I really want that, you know, this is really interesting about what's going on in downtown LA or what's going on with street vendors or whatever. Are you sure? And sometimes when you just talk that way and be sincere, they'll say, oh, sure, no problem. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they say, no, you know, because they're worried about maybe their own safety, maybe, especially right now, maybe their exposure to immigration officials or whatnot.
Right.
So you just walk. I just walk away. Most people don't care, and you just play it by ear. You just have to keep your sensibilities up. You know, if people are getting upset, you just walk to another place and you do something else.
Yeah, that's where it's important to have a certain level of empathy while you're out there. Like you said, if you're in an area that is predominantly populated by immigrants, then, you know, taking photos may make people nervous, especially in today's political climate, right? So you have to be aware of that kind of stuff when you go in as a photographer, because no one knows who you are or what your intentions are at all. And it's probably best that they err on the side of caution if, you know, if bad things can happen if they don't. So, yeah, that's a really common sense. Sounds like, you know, it's the name of the game here.
Common sense. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not the... You're walking around with your sort of normal-ish lens, and you're not the person that throws on the long lens and creeps behind the bush to get the shots that you want, right?
I don't do from the hip. I don't, you know, flip out the screen and pretend to look one way and go another way.
Yeah.
I find that just too hard to concentrate, to be honest.
Right.
But you know, I wear a big hat. I wear a big safari-like hat, you know, to shield my glasses, and I'm pretty obvious. So the other thing is, when you're doing street photography, if you find a place where there's a lot going on and you think it's like a really interesting background color wise, light wise, whatever, if you just hang out there, you start to establish yourself and people walk into your frame, and then it's much different story than if you're like chasing somebody down a street. And that's very threatening. But if you're just standing there and people are coming into your story, that's typically not threatening.
You're stationary. Yeah. And the other piece of it, I can imagine you out there with your big hat on, your safari hat and your camera. You're going to look a little bit like a tourist anyway, right? And you're not with a big DSLR. You got the small Olympus. So you're just kind of, hey, that's a tourist over there. You know, who cares? Right. You're a non-threatening tourist. So let her just do her thing, whatever.
That's right.
Well, cool. So what's next for Nancy? What's the end game, or at least the next chapter in what you're going to be doing with Life Happens in Color, that brand, and the brand of Nancy?
Yeah. So I do a lot of short little teaching lectures at our local in the Thousand Oaks area, and I live out in Ventura County. So for people who are familiar, it's literally halfway between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of local lectures and the like in the area, working with our club members. But I want to branch that out to more workshops in the Los Angeles area. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on that. And we'll see where that goes. The book's now available if you like what I say, if you like what I am thinking, want to learn more about how I approach my photography. In the book, I go through individual pictures. I don't know, it's about 100 pages. Yep. I go through individual pictures to tell you exactly what I was thinking, why I took the photograph that way, why I framed it up that way, what it means, composition, what composition means in street photography, and like that.
Love it. Well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Nancy. You got a lot of stuff to do this weekend. You got Mother's Day. You got that festival coming up. You're busy. Your battery's charged. Memory card's wiped. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Awesome. Nancy, thanks for coming on. We'll link to your social media, to your blog, to the book page and all that stuff in the description and the blog post for this episode. So,
all right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is Twit.